Hi, this is Josh Bunker, and welcome to the Work the System podcast, where we help business owners move from owning a job to owning a business, mastering their system so they can simplify growth. And today I have a special guest. I have Stefan Spencer. Stefan is the internationally recognized SEO expert, and I'm very excited to have him on. He is the best-selling author and sought-after keynote speaker. His guests have included, or clients have included, Zappos, Channel, Quicksilver, Bed Bath & Beyond, Volvo, Sony, and many others. He is the co-author of The Art of SEO, author of Google Power Search, and co-author of Social E-Commerce, all published by O'Reilly. Stefan founded Net Concepts in 1995 and grew it into a multinational SEO agency before selling it to Convero. Stefan is a frequent TV guest, appearing on various ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and the CW affiliates. He is a contributor to Harvard Business Review, Adweek, Founder Magazine, and Search Engine Land. He hosts two popular podcasts, Get Yourself Optimized and Marketing Speak. All right. So, Stefan, let's start from the beginning. I'm excited to have you on here. How did you get into your line of work and become this SEO expert?
Thanks for having me. And it all started when I was studying for a PhD in biochemistry, and I decided to drop out of that PhD and start an agency. I was in the 90s, even before SEO really existed, and I started building websites for clients, and then the search engines prior to Google were pretty easy to manipulate, not in a nefarious way, but you know, SEO is manipulation, or you're trying to gain an unfair advantage to get to the top of Google above your competitors. Anyway, so I was working on figuring out that black box and how it works and kind of reverse engineering everything. And then Google came around and it's really changed the game because it wasn't as easy to manipulate and it was so much better than the other competitor search engines. So I just wanted to dive in and become a real expert on Google. Yeah, I've been able to achieve that with multiple books and I speak at a lot of conferences on the topic of Google and SEO and help clients, you know, like Chanel and so forth, getting higher rankings for keywords that they care about, not just the brand keywords. And yeah, it's been a fun ride. In between there, I sold my agency and I started another consultancy. Went and lived in New Zealand for almost 8 years because you can do the internet thing from anywhere. Mm-hmm. Pretty fun.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of different tangents we're gonna dive into, and we'll see how much ground we cover. But I'm gonna start with questions that matter the most to me, to my own business, because I want to know. So with SEO. You've been doing this for decades now. What have been the big changes in the last, let's say, 5-10 years that maybe people aren't aware of? Maybe they had it dialed in 5 years ago, but they don't realize they're really far behind the game. So what's changed?
Yeah. So back in the day, keywords were everything. Not that keywords aren't important now, but it's really about entities. Google's so much smarter at figuring out things like relationships between words and phrases, synonyms and so forth. So you don't have to get the exact phrase in your title and in your body copy and in anchor text, links pointing to the page. It's not that precise anymore. Google is way more sophisticated. So if you're trying to rank for, I don't know, small business consultants, Salt Lake City, mm-hmm. That's what you're trying to rank for. You're not going to put that in your title. You're not going to put that three times in your first paragraph. You're not going to put links on other pages with that phrase that point to your homepage. That doesn't work. That actually looks like spam to Google, right? So you need to be more nuanced about it, and it's going to become more and more nuanced over time because Google is evolving into more of an AI-based system than anything else. Artificial intelligence is the future of SEO. It's the future of everything. And if we can kind of get ahead of that and think more future focused instead of just in the moment, what works today, because what works today may not work in 6 months or a year from now.
That's really fascinating. Because I remember just when we first started to work the system, we had some SEO consultants telling us, you know, these words, and you got to use these words again and again and again. And I just remember Sam's philosophy is I'm just going to write what's true and however I want to, and that's eventually going to work. And it sounds like this strategy from maybe 5-10 years ago is now becoming more accurate. That's interesting. So for a small business owner who maybe doesn't have a huge budget for SEO, what should they be thinking of for their, let's just say they've got a hair salon. I mean, where do they begin?
Yeah. Well, it all starts with thinking different and coming up with something that is remarkable. And I'm using that word deliberately. Worthy of remark is really what you're after. And that concept comes from Seth Godin from his book, The Purple Cow. Mm-hmm. I love Seth Godin. He's like the marketing legend of all time. I had him on my Marketing Speak podcast recently.
Oh, nice.
Great episode. Definitely recommend listening to that one. But the idea here is that if, let's say you're driving down a country road with your family and you see cows in the pastures and so forth, nobody's going to want to stop the car and check out the cows. But if there's a purple cow in the pasture and one of the people in the car notice, you're all going to want to get out of the car, take photos, selfies with the purple cow and so forth. That is worthy of remark. That's what you need to be online. And whatever you do, whether you're a hair salon or you're a consultant or a coach or an author, speaker, whatever it is, you need to get attention in a way that adds value for the people that are being reached, whether they're viewers or visitors or readers or whatever. And the purple cow idea is going to be a game changer for you, because when you create content that's worthy of remark, it's an idea worth spreading, to steal the tagline from TED, mm-hmm. TED Talks. It's worthy of getting links. And that's the currency of SEO. The currency of Google is still links. It has been since the beginning, but it's not just any old links. This isn't a democracy with Google. It's a meritocracy. So a link from CNN is worth infinitely more than a link from Jim Bob's personal homepage. So we need to be very specific in who we target in the Linkerati. It's like the Illuminati, but for those with high authority and trust as far as Google's concerned. So if they're linking to us, that's really something that's going to pop us to the top of Google. And if we're just writing boring stuff about, you know, these are my services, or these are my products, this is my About Me page, this is how to contact me, it's basically a brochure, you've killed it. You've destroyed your chances of ranking at the top of Google. You've destroyed your chances, frankly, of people coming back to your site. It's brochureware. What do people do with a brochure that they get in the mail? It goes right into the trash before they even bring it into the house, right? So that needs to be a mantra. Is like, I'm going to add value and be remarkable in everything I do online. And, you know, this add value first and then ask for something after is going to need to kind of frame everything that you do with your online marketing and SEO.
So for, let's do it in a really practical situation. So let's say, because I have a podiatrist client, okay, he's got several offices and he wants to compete. He wants people to come to his clinic for foot issues. How is he going to go about getting people linking to, I mean, because there are, I guess, I don't really know what's black hat, gray hat, or white hat anymore, but there are different techniques to getting links. What should he do? I mean, is he going to spend a lot of time creating content, or is he going to start doing YouTube videos, or is he going to start, you know, how would he go about getting this kind of authority and getting people to search for his page?
Yeah. Well, I wrote an article recently on Search Engine Land all about authority and what that means and why you need it. So I'll share that URL with you. You can put it in the show notes or whatever. But the idea here is if you're adding enough value that it's remarkable, mm-hmm. doesn't have to be the best, most interesting, most useful, most helpful, most controversial, most humorous or anything. It just has to have something about it that's worthy of remark. And let's say for your podiatrist, it's the 10 most common foot ailments and the most unconventional kind of solutions or fixes to these ailments. And they're pretty wild out there sort of things that people do. And maybe that would be an interesting angle to take. It's not medical advice. It's not helpful because it's like crazy out there sorts of interventions that maybe aren't even done anymore. But it makes for entertaining an entertaining read. And here's where people kind of get their mind blown by how different this is from what they're used to doing with marketing. You're not necessarily writing this piece of content for your customers, for your prospects. You might think, what? Remember I referred to the Illuminati of the internet being the Linkerati. They have all the link authority. They're the CNNs of the world, not the Jim Bobs. How do we create something that appeals to them, right? We're writing for that target audience, which means we kind of temporarily set aside our traditional target audience of our customers and prospects. And we're writing something maybe controversial or contentious or that has some sort of intrigue or surprise about it, something that is maybe counterintuitive. And that is going to do well for the Linkerati, and it may not appeal at all to our traditional customer base. And that's okay, because we're trying to get the link equity flowing into our site. And that's like the rising tide that lifts all boats. If we get one article that does really well because it's just so out there and amazing and remarkable and it gets great links, high authority, high trust links pointing to it, and you have landing pages, sales pages, product and service pages, your homepage and so forth, every one of those pages you care about ranking in Google is going to rise in the rankings. It's the rising tide that lifts all boats because of this awesome article that you created that isn't even meant for your customers. It's not that article that's going to dominate in Google. It's all these other pages. It's the rising tide that lifts all boats.
Hmm. Okay, now I have to ask you a specific question. So how about me? So I've, as you know, work the system, right? So we do business coaching, consulting, help companies make more, work less in terms of the entrepreneurs. So if you were consulting me, you'd say, hey, what, pick a celebrity, pick certain things that are popular and just write some controversial article about Donald Trump or something like that?
Sure, you could certainly do that. That's one angle. When I say angle, I mean like it's a hook. It's an approach that helps you rise above all the noise, because we're awash in just good information, good, helpful information about time management, productivity, process improvement. Like I would drown with all the information, and if I were to print it out and put it in this room with me, I couldn't get out of the room. Right? So there's so much good information on this. We're not going to add more good information. We're going to take a stand. We're going to maybe not even be controversial, just be different and valuable in a unique way. So if that is a celebrity hook that we take, like, I don't know, let's say 10 counterintuitive time management strategies that I've learned from Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And it's not actually taking a political angle. Like, you would get value from that article whether you love or hate him. And some things are really counterintuitive and could be considered controversial. Like, you want to spend as much time on the golf course as possible because that's going to free your mind up from the day-to-day. You're not going to be working in the business so much as able to work on the business. So take more time going to the golf course or whatever your thing is that allows you to disconnect and decompress and think bigger picture, right?
Yeah, that's a great hook. I might use that article. So what about different types of businesses? So, you know, some companies, they just get words, they just get leads through AdWords or Facebook ads, and they just have a clear, simple funnel. Are there some companies that really should focus a lot of attention on SEO and other ones that, you know what, just SEO is not going to be the way that they attract their traffic?
I think every business, and I know I'm biased, but every business needs to focus on SEO because it is an asset that you build. If you think of your business as an asset, and everybody should, it's a business that is going to eventually be sold, hopefully, because assets get sold. I mean, there's an exit strategy there at some point, whether it means you eventually die and then the business goes out of business because you didn't plan for an exit strategy. I mean, that is still an exit, not the one that you proactively wanted necessarily, right? So you need to think through, like, what's my exit strategy? How is this business an asset? And when you're over-reliant on Google ads or Facebook ads, it's a problem because it's not an asset that you've built up. It's almost like a business addiction, right? It's a monster that has to be fed. And the moment you stop feeding it, the moment then is when you stop receiving the traffic. Whereas with SEO, let's say that you build really high quality links, you do this content creation that's remarkable, you do outreach to influencers, to the Linkerati, you collaborate with them, you give before you get, and do all the stuff that I've been alluding to, you have an asset. And let's say that you take 6 months off and do nothing but play golf. Your business is still going to, your website, the online portion of your business is still going to do well in terms of its rankings in Google and traffic, even though you've stopped building links, you've stopped creating content and so forth. And why is that? Because it was an asset that you worked on for X number of months beforehand. All those great links that you acquired from sites that have authority and trust, they don't just drop their links from their site that point to you because, you know, it's been 2 weeks or 2 months, right? You write a blog post and you mention some great resource, an app that you have installed on your phone, or a fun or useful book that you've enjoyed reading. You're not going to go back and remove the link 6 months later, right? So those links stay. That is an asset that you have built, just like the asset of your email list, the asset of your retargeting audience. If you're doing Facebook ads appropriately and you actually are following people over time and doing retargeting on Facebook or Google or both, you know, those ads that keep following you, like, oh, why is it that they keep harassing me on all these different websites with their ad? How did they know about it? It's with the retargeting. So if you're building your retargeting audience, that's an asset. So those sorts of things that are assets are going to make your business more saleable. And every business, I think, needs to be more saleable and more asset focused.
So what is, because this is got to be overwhelming for a lot of folks when they're thinking about, you know, their law firm or whatever they have, and they're thinking, well, where do I begin? You know, if they just had a website, they put their shingle up and they're doing legal services, they're helping people through bankruptcy or whatever. Like where do they begin? Because I'm looking at your bio and you've got, you know, your TV appearances and magazines and podcasts and videos. So you're everywhere. How does someone decide where to start? Like what assets payback can be quicker and which assets are more like long-term plays, but you should still do?
Yeah. I think everybody should start with their website because their website is their digital presence online. Yes, they can have a presence on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that. But as one of my mentors, James Schramko, says, you want to own the race course. Okay. If you don't own the race course, but Facebook does, say it's a Facebook group that is very active, or you have a Facebook page that's doing well for you, and then Facebook changes the rules, you're out of luck, right? Let's say they shut down your account. Yikes, you didn't own the race course. They just put you out of business. So you want to own the race course. And what's the race course online? It's your website. That's the primary. And remember, I gave this analogy of an online brochure is like the worst thing that you want to have, because it doesn't even make it into the house if a brochure comes in the mail, right, goes right into the trash. The opposite of that is a website that's an experience. A website is something that you do, not something that you view. And that's going to be a game changer for folks. If they're thinking, well, this is the place where I publish my about me and my about my business, my history of like how I started the business and my credentials and my team members and my contact information, you've created a brochure, and that is the exact opposite of an experience. So start there, create an experience, make it remarkable, and you have some traffic already. So that's going to be a better experience for those folks who are already coming to your site. So you'll get better conversion, right? Converting more people from visitors into buyers or into leads, because you have a more effective website. And then you can do social media marketing, you can do SEO, you can do Google Ads or whatever other strategies for getting your message out there. But if you don't have a powerful message, and it's not contained within your website, it's not a differentiating value proposition, you're dead in the water.
Yeah, and things are obviously getting more competitive as more and more sites go online and are getting sharper and sharper. So what about someone who's listening to this and they think, you know what, I should do this, but I'm just so busy doing my thing. You know, maybe they're a roofer, like they're a contractor, they do their own thing or they build software. What should they outsource this kind of help? I mean, should they get someone to help them or should they just go on a binge and learn all they can about it and just try to do it themselves? Because it sounds like this is not a one-time thing. Once you determine that SEO is important or authority is important, it's something you have to do for the rest of your business. So is it better to outsource this kind of a skill set or learn it and do it yourself on an ongoing basis?
I think it's a hybrid strategy that works the best, where you're not taking your eye off the ball of what you do the best. Okay. You know, your core business, your core kind of your zone of genius is probably not SEO. It's probably not online marketing. And if that's the case, then stay in your lane. Focus on what you're really good at. Don't try and become an expert in something that's not part of your unique ability. Mm-hmm. Now, if you just completely delegate or outsource everything related to your website and your online presence and SEO and everything, then you're probably going to open yourself up to a world of hurt, because you haven't just delegated tasks. You've delegated your future. You're not the driver of your own bus anymore. You're not the captain of your own ship. Nobody cares as much about your business and your financial freedom as you do. So you need to care and strategically choose the right solution providers to help you on this journey. You don't have to do the SEO yourself, but you have to care enough to know what's happening and kind of steer that ship. So I would start with a consultant who is a subject matter expert, not just in SEO, but online marketing generally, mm-hmm. so they can help steer you in the right directions. It might be that you actually start with Google Ads or Facebook Ads, or maybe email marketing to your existing customer base, because that's a faster path to ROI. SEO takes time. It can take 6 months, a year, longer, depending on where you start from. If you got a brand new website, expect that this is at least a year-long initiative before you start getting significant ROI from it. On the other hand, if you do this in a way that you're already getting some audience interaction, you're already getting some traction from your email list, from your other channels online, then this work that you're doing to advance your SEO also helps the conversion of the existing traffic and existing email subscribers and so forth. That's fantastic. You kill two birds with one stone. So that's what I'm looking for my clients. I coach clients on how to do this sort of thing. And it means finding them potentially in solution providers or agencies that do different aspects of online marketing, but also keeping an eye on what they're up to, making sure that they're doing the right things and the right people are in the right seats on the bus. Mm-hmm.
So how do small companies compete with some of the larger companies? So let's just say you produce clothing or jewelry or something like that. How are you going to compete with some of the bigger names in terms of SEO? Or is it just totally, you're not competing with them, it's apples to oranges?
Well, you're not going to compete with them on the highly competitive, high volume keywords. So you're not going to outrank, let's say, Chanel for jewelry or handbags or fragrances. It's not going to happen. But what might be an opportunity for you is in micro niches, keywords that are not highly sought after, and work your way up as you build your authority. So when my daughter started, my oldest daughter started doing SEO when she was 14 years old. She's 27 now. She was 14 playing a game online called Neopets constantly. It was a thing back then. And she saw that I had websites that made money in passive income, money while I slept. Mm-hmm. She's like, I want that. And I explained to her how it worked. You know, it's Google AdSense and you have to get high rankings in Google organically to get the free traffic, and then you turn that into money through a Google AdSense ad units that you place on your site. When people click on the ads, you make money, and then you get paid. And she's like, I want that. And her passion at the time was Neopets, so she created a blog all about Neopets. Well, she started small with keywords that were not really highly sought after, weren't ultra competitive, like Neopet sheets. Mm-hmm. Not even the plural Neopets, the singular. She's not very popular at all. And she got on page one for that. She got a little bit of traffic from that. And then as she started being more visible with getting speaking appearances, she started speaking at conferences at 16 years old, which is pretty cool. Then bloggers in the audience would write about her, and then she'd get links from that. It's pretty cool. And then she was able to go after Neopets sheets, which was a much more popular keyword. Eventually, after getting like written up in newspapers and getting TV appearances and everything, all this while she was still a teenager, she was able to get on page one for Neopets all by itself. Not wow. outranking Neopets.com, but pretty closely underneath Neopets.com, like position three or four. Pretty darn good, right? But that's she awesome. Didn't start there. She knew that she had to work her way up. Just like if you want to get on TV, you don't start by going after Good Morning America or the Today Show. Nobody's going to take you on as a big risk. You've never done TV? You'll probably freeze up. Yeah. that's not a win-win. You start with small local markets. You work your way up. So when I started doing TV appearances, I started in Reno, Albuquerque, Tucson. And then as I got more experience and finessed my message and my presentation, then I was able to get onto bigger markets. Phoenix, for example, the top 20 market. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually I'll make it onto Good Morning America or the Today Show. That's one of my goals. But you got to start smaller and you work way up.
Very cool. Well, just because of time, I want to get a couple more interesting questions, mainly for me. So with the advent of video and AI and translating like what we're doing right now into automatically Google can take all the words. How does that play into future of search, future of SEO? And should people be doing more video? Should it be live video? Where should they put their video content? And what is that going to mean for online businesses in the future?
Yes. So yes, and YouTube.
Okay.
Now, let me unpack that a little bit. So it's the future of search. There's so much to that. I mean, we don't have enough time to go into that in any depth, but we're going to be talking to our computers a lot more than we are, our devices, and getting voice answers back. So that's already happening with like Google Home and Amazon Echo as examples. But if you want to leverage video, the best place to leverage that is on YouTube as a long-term play. You can leverage that short-term on Facebook, but it's a flash in the pan. So I'm not saying don't upload Facebook video to Facebook natively. You should. It's a great opportunity, but don't expect that anybody's going to watch that video in a week or a month from now, right? It's a flash in the pan. And same thing with live streaming on Facebook. So Facebook Live is great, and nobody's going to watch those videos in a week, unless you're driving traffic to those videos through Facebook ads. But with YouTube Live, you can get people watching those replays for a very long time. So you get a nice boost while you're live. So that's great on YouTube, and you get ongoing benefit. You get visibility, and then when the YouTube algorithm transcribes that text out of the video, that is something that you can even download. It's called an SRT file, and you can re-upload that video to other platforms. I mentioned Facebook. Well, what about LinkedIn? LinkedIn is a fabulous opportunity, and they're going after Facebook with their own newsfeed and everything. And it's a ripe opportunity. So you upload your video to LinkedIn natively with the SRT file that YouTube created for you for free. Just make sure that it didn't make any mistakes. Sometimes there are mistakes in the transcription. So you fix that. and fix that on YouTube. So that's correct on YouTube. That's all searchable content, by the way. So mm-hmm. people type in keywords into the YouTube search box. Incidentally, YouTube is the number two search engine. So if you're not on YouTube, you're invisible in the number two search engine. So people type in keywords into the YouTube search box. And if you said something in the video, you're going to be a match. You might not rank well, but you are a match in the search results because you said those words in your video. Even if you didn't put in the title, you didn't put in your description, it's just in the words that you spoke. That's how sophisticated and awesome the YouTube algorithm is. So you take advantage of LinkedIn as well, upload that video natively, upload it with the SRT file, and now you're going to do better in LinkedIn than if you just uploaded the video without the SRT file. And here's another nuance. If you want to start ranking in that number two search engine of YouTube for foreign language search queries that relate to the services or products that you offer, get your transcription file, that SRT file, translated into foreign languages, right? Let's say mm-hmm. Spanish, for example. You get that translated in Spanish, you upload that as a foreign language translation. You didn't have to do anything with the video itself. You don't have to learn Spanish. You don't have to reshoot the video. You just upload this foreign language translation file in addition to the transcript that was already created in English, if you're speaking in English. And now folks can do a search in their native language, in this case, Spanish, find your video and watch your video in English, but with Spanish subtitles. Hmm. Isn't that awesome?
That is awesome. Hopefully my marketing team's listening to this because we've been doing more and more live on Facebook and then taking the videos and then putting them onto LinkedIn. But I don't know what they're doing with the SRT files. That's not my brain doesn't think in terms of that. So I'll have to check with them. This is great. I'll tell them to watch this.
yeah. So video is the future along with voice. So definitely leverage that. Put as much as you can out on your YouTube channel. And like I said, it's the number two search engine. Don't neglect it.
So final question then. So what's one thing that you would leave the audience with? So knowing that we've got small business owners here, maybe half online companies, half traditional companies, what's kind of one piece of advice you want to leave them with? And then we'll let them, you can tell them where to find you as well.
Yeah. I would say the best thing they can do is to be smart in the hiring process because they're not experts on online marketing and SEO probably, and they need some guidance. And the person or firm that they hire to guide them will make or break their success path. Hmm. So if they utilize some trick questions in the interview process that will help suss out whether this is a charlatan or snake oil salesperson in front of them or not, that's going to be very, very helpful. So that would be my advice for the listener or the viewer is get a cheat sheet of these trick questions. And I actually have one on my website. It's called the SEO BS Detector.
Love it.
And there are a half dozen different questions in there. Like, for example, what's your process for optimizing meta keywords? And it's a trick question because there's only one right answer. And that is meta keywords. What? Are you serious? Those never counted in Google because they never did count in Google ever. Not on day one. Certainly not now. Never. And if they say something like, oh, they're not as important now as they used to be, we don't spend much time on those, or the answer was something other than, are you kidding? Then you know to kick them to the curb. They're not going to be a good hire, whether they're a potential employee or contractor or agency for you.
That's great. Okay, so the cheat sheet.
That's on stephanspencer.com in the resources area under guys and white papers, yes.
Okay, cool. All right, and then if they want to find you, find your podcast, I'm assuming stephanspencer.com is where they want to go?
Yeah, so that's the main site. That's where I have a whole learning center about SEO and everything. I also have my two podcasts. Marketing Speak is the marketing related show, and that's at marketingspeak.com. And then Get Yourself Optimized. That website is getyourselfoptimized.com, and that's all about productivity and life hacking. That's the show you were on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything that will take you to the next level in terms of your life and your business, that's on the Get Yourself Optimized podcast.
Awesome. Well, very good. Well, Stephan, I really want to thank you and appreciate all the information. I've got a full page of notes. This has been very useful to me. Hopefully useful to those of you watching this. who want to get their business found and have authority and use SEO tactics. And certainly, Stefan is the expert at that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today to the Work the System podcast. I look forward to sharing another podcast with you next week, helping you grow your business with systems so you can work less and make more. Thanks, everybody.